It's a trap.
Hello and welcome to episode number 188 of Radio TCX, your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy. This week's episode is going to be a little bit out of the norm. John and Carson, I decided to give them the week off, so instead I had a one-on-one interview with Paul Olson. Paul is a Minnesota player. You probably recognize him because he was a guest on our show a couple weeks ago, and then he closed out at top eight at Worlds, so I decided to do a little one-on-one interview. Kind of follow up with what we talked about in that first episode before Worlds, talk about his Worlds experience and flying the Separatist Swarm there. So here's our interview with Paul Olson. Hope you guys like it. All right, so I am talking to Paul Olson, top eight at this most recent, the first, second edition X-Wing World Championship, and the highest-ranked currently Separatist Swarm player. Paul, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, Tim. Pleasure to be here.
And I'm sure you're ready to just kind of rub it in my face, your top eight finish, because we had you on the show a couple weeks ago, and we had a great episode. You taught us all about how to beat Separatist Swarms. Clearly, not enough players were paying attention because you made it down to top eight.
Exactly. People needed listen to that episode, folks, if you want to take me down. But I will say, yes, I was pretty excited to come back on and rub it in your guys' faces a little bit.
Well, and some people, you know, because we're all friends here, and there was some mild teasing, I'll admit, of you by me, Carson, and John the week afterwards.
Yeah, not only that episode, but the week afterwards, too. Yeah. Oh, man.
It never stopped. But I want to say earnestly, Paul, on behalf of all three members of Radio TCX, in spite of what we did before, I wanted you to know that we're all very disappointed you didn't make top four.
I knew that was coming.
Just the setup. No, it's a good job. All right. So today I thought a fun way to start is we very rarely do long form interviews on Radio TCX. So we're going to start before we get into the world stuff, talk a little bit about your experience getting into X-Wing, what you find interesting about the game. We'll do a little bit of a player profile to learn your background in X-Wing, and then we can talk about Worlds and the future of X-Wing and all that good stuff. So yeah. I think a great place to start is to go into how you got into the game. So when did your X-Wing journey begin?
Yeah, so a buddy of mine in Ames named Andy Van Wyk had a core set, a Falcon and a Firespray from 1.0. This is back in like 2015. I saw it on his shelf and I was like, what is that? And he's like, well, it's X-Wing. I've played it a few times. And he's still like a very casual player. He's not in the competitive scene at all. But we played it once and I was hooked. Played as the Empire. Just loved it. From there, I started a local league at my local store in Ames, Iowa. And then from there, kind of the rest is history.
So what was it about the game that caught you so right away? Like, basically, it sounds like from the first game you played, you were hooked on it, right?
The miniatures are absolutely amazing. There are a lot of miniatures games that don't come painted or pre-constructed out of the box compared to, like, Warhammer, for example. So that made entry into the game really easy. And then starting to play it, because there are, I guess, less pieces than you would in, like, an epic Warhammer-type game, it kind of felt more like free-form chess, like 1v1.
Sure.
And I'm a very competitive person as well, love casual games, but it definitely scratches that itch of competition that I absolutely love. And I think another thing too about the game, while yes, there's a lot of strategy involved, top players consistently making cuts, at the end of the day, because it's a dice game, any player can beat any player. And I think that's alluring for any player that comes into the game. I mean, if your dice blank out consistently, no matter what you do, you probably gonna lose. Now it's a very small percentage, but again, that invites people to come into the game.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting about X-Wing too. Like, a lot of people complain about the dice variance. To me, that's one of the more interesting parts of the game, where I think you really evaluate a player's skill over a large number of games. Like, we see these major competitions where you don't have any one game define you, because I know Carson can give a lot of great examples. He's a fantastic X-Wing player, and if you watch some of the stream games he's been on, it looks like he doesn't know what he's doing. But he plays so many games that he's really established himself, right? So that you can have those off games where you just set up a bad engagement or you get a bad string of dice luck, something you're familiar with very recently.
Well, and I mean, top players consistently make cut. Top players consistently do well in tournaments. And so, yes, you can keep complaining about dice, but I know even in my last game, like, I wanted to give Alex a lot of credit, which we'll talk about in a little bit too, because he outflew me in that game. Yes, dice didn't go my way, but I don't want to be a player that's constantly harping about dice because, yeah, they can go bad for you, but ultimately I think what draws me to the game is that it is player ability focused.
Absolutely. So let's look a little bit into your X-Wing playstyle here. One question we always ask whenever we interview someone on Radio TCX is we want to know if you had to pick a talent card or a force power upgrade that best describes your X-Wing playstyle, which one would it be and why? And now, you know, you don't have to link it directly to the card's ability, but if you can, that's more thematic. But which one would you pick to describe you?
Yeah, I would say swarm tactics for obvious reasons because
Seems appropriate.
I fly the swarm, but actually it makes sense too because I typically like to match initiatives when I'm flying. It makes things a lot easier. You can remember triggers a lot more because you're having to not focus on which ship is moving first a lot of times. And so matching that initiative value can be really key in games, which swarm tactics does as well. So it works on a couple different levels.
There you go. Wow. You really thought that one through.
I try.
I think the first time I answered that one, my answer, I don't even know what I said. It was probably nonsense. I just picked one with a cool name. You were flying the Separatists for this year's Worlds. That's a relatively new faction. Historically, are there factions you've been more aligned with or list archetypes even that you've tended to more align with?
Yeah, so when I first started, I was really drawn to the Imperials because of Vader, iconic ships, and they're the good guys.
Of course.
And then got into Scum just because they had crazy game-breaking abilities and crazy combos, and it was just kind of fun. And I really like Boba Fett. Like, he's my bae. But then with the new factions that came out, I actually had all the different factions and was like, okay, I don't think I can actually afford money-wise to be in every single faction.
That's
so I had to
kind of
narrow
now.
It down. Right. I had to narrow it down, and I found that I was always playing Imperial and Scum in tournaments. I wasn't playing any other factions, so I was like, well, we'll keep those. But I wanted to try out one of the new factions, and CIS just looked so iconic and cinematic, and especially with those swarms, and started putting them on the table, started realizing, oh, wow, this network calculations ability is pretty good, and with so many ships, it was just kind of a blast to fly, and it became easier as I went, so kind of stuck with those.
It almost seems like that the Separatists kind of combine your favorite elements from the Scum and the Imperials,
oh,
right?
Yeah.
So you have the swarms that the Imperials bring, and then kind of the broken-esque game mechanics of keeping calculate tokens and free crack shots.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, and probably another reason why I'm drawn to it. So, yeah, for sure.
So here's a question where you really have to shed any bit of humility that you have. What are the skills that you think make you a standout X-Wing player? Because I think that's well established by you making top eight. You've performed consistently well at other events. What are the skills that you really bring to X-Wing that make you a quality X-Wing player?
Yeah, so I'm going to start with one that doesn't seem to be intuitive, but I would say a focus on keeping things casual in games, because especially like at my store or home games, because it allows me to debrief with players afterwards and constantly improve on my abilities. Even at Worlds, like, I loved all the games that I had. I seriously had no negative play experiences with every single player there because we were able to keep it lighthearted and fun, laughing, high-fiving. Even the top eight game against Alex, like, we were able to high-five and hug afterwards. I mean, I can't understate that, and I hope that that continues to permeate the X-Wing community as a value.
Mm-hmm.
Moving from that, though, knock card abilities, the ability to visualize where a lot of ships are going to be. So flying eight ships can be very mentally taxing.
Absolutely.
But for whatever reason, it's very easy for me to see where a ship's going to end up. Where are they going to then barrel, and how can I set up the next turn's moves as far as options for lanes and being able to change targets? And only bumping when I want to. Bumps kill action economy, and with eight ships, you got to make sure you're not going to be able to do that. Probably the highest compliment I was paid the entire tournament was in my top 16 game against Paul LaRue, who goes, oh my gosh, you just flew eight ships, didn't bump any of them, and blocked every single maneuver that my ship had. And it's true. He did, I think, like a five straight, but because of where my ships were, there was literally no move he could make. He bumped into my front one and then got lit up by seven shots. And
that must have felt pretty good.
It definitely did. And that was some of my best flying that I've done. But being able to dial that in, I think, sets me apart from other Swarm players.
And I think there's something that a lot of beginner X-Wing players, too, miss out on the visualizing, not just the current turn, but the following turns.
Yes.
And I think there's a big skill jump you make as an X-Wing player when you start to be able to accurately position ships, like make decisions on positioning that'll affect you the next several turns, where you might make a really great position this turn, but then you don't have yourself set up for the future. So I think that is a jump that a lot of, you know, middling tier X-Wing players can make to get into those higher levels of play.
Yeah. For sure. I think, too, like, I enjoy list building, but really, I'll take something that someone else has done really well and then tweak it. So not
iterate,
trying to reinvent.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. Not trying to reinvent the wheel, but, okay, there are a lot of great list builders out there. We have List Fortress and Metawing, so grab what's out there and find my own flavor on it. I think, too, in a tournament setting, you have to be able to see an opponent's list and come up with a game plan very quickly and be able to execute that game plan quickly. And that's something that I've really worked on as far as X-Wing skills. Tied to that is tournament stamina. So I did a lot of chess tournaments in high school and even college, and those can be extremely taxing. You can play like 10 games in a day, and every single time, you start over again.
Right.
And so you really have to make sure that mentally you're going to be able to last throughout the day. And I have found that throughout the tournament, I'll see other players start to really fall off towards the end of the day. And that's where I'll have a big advantage. For a while there, my friends joked I was Paul Owen Wunson, which is funny because Olson, O-L, kind of looks like Owen 1. Because I would start every tournament like that, like without fail. But I'd always finish strong. Submarining is a thing too, but that was something that I was like, all right, if I can improve how I start, then I'm going to be able to even do better at tournaments and not have to worry about always being on the bubble.
Well, and I think that ties into your point too about keeping kind of a casual atmosphere at the game table, where, like you said, it's just like chess, where you're going to play a bunch of games in a row and they are all going to be distinct from one another.
Yeah.
Where if you put yourself in a bad frame of mind early on or in any one particular game, that's going to set you up poorly. It's going to put you in a bad mental state for the following game. So you want to be able to endure however many rounds of Swiss you're going to play and still keep the right attitude all the way through. Because if you get, you know, if you go on tilt after one really harsh loss, even if you have a good matchup the following round, if your mind's not in the right place, then you're going to probably make mistakes and compromise your ability to play.
Yep, for sure. And in this game, it only takes one mistake and the game can be over. I know flying against the Swarm specifically, if one of those Jedi picks the wrong spot and doesn't go away instead of coming in, for example, and call that wrong and get blocked, like I was talking about in the game against Paul LaRue, that ship's going to die.
Yeah, and that's it. That might be your whole game right there.
Yep, exactly. Last thing I would say is on stream, I'm usually pretty good. there's one caveat to that I'll talk about in a little bit, but if you want to do well in tournaments, expect to be on stream. Gold Squadron is now streaming a bunch. Obviously, Fantasy Flight's live stream. Radio TCX has done live streams. And you definitely feel the lights on you, and that can get in players' heads. I've seen that happen against opponents where I know it's a good opponent, but it's like their first time being on stream, and they just, for whatever reason, mentally make mistakes, miss triggers, bump when they normally wouldn't. So being okay, being in the lights, I actually, for the most part, love it and enjoy it. It makes me mentally more focused, and then also allows me to review my games so I can go back, watch footage, and say, oh, okay, this wasn't the ideal move in this situation. I lucked out. Or, hey, this was really good, and this is why, that kind of thing.
Well, and I think there's a big divide between players, too, because I know some really top-tier Minnesota players who will just refuse to play on stream, you know, if they have the option. If they're in the top cut, they'll do it. But if it's just Swiss rounds, they feel that curse, you know, going on the live stream and and let's get out. I'm actually more in your camp where I find when I'm on the stream, I tend to play my best games of X-Wing.
Yeah.
Even at this most recent Worlds, I lost against a Sinker Swarm, but that was a bad matchup for me, and I felt pretty confident about my plan and my setup. So I'm excited to see that game again. But I think it can, if you look at it the right way, it puts you in the right state of mind to play a very clean game and to think through your decisions carefully.
Yeah, I totally agree.
All right, so let's talk about the 2019 World Championships, because this was a pretty huge event, both a new venue for the game, so accommodated a lot more players, the first World Championship for second edition, so that's pretty monumental. What were your feelings just about Worlds in general, looking beyond the games here? How did you like the event overall?
It was amazing. I got to play so many players from around the country, around the world. There was so much energy in the building, and you're packed in with a bunch of nerds that all love this miniatures game.
Oh, yeah.
All want to play and are able to high-five for the most part afterwards with very little drama. Throwing back beers, win or lose afterwards. I mean, man, what a great event and atmosphere. So kudos to FFG, but kudos to the community for just saying, you know what? We're going to own this game. We're going to own what this looks like. And I mean, things like, and a couple other podcasts have talked about this, like, it's the Resistance. Like, that absolutely was hilarious.
Yeah, every like, time.
yeah, exactly. And like, then everybody responded to it, and just a lot of fun.
Yeah, I do think they knocked it out of the park this year with Worlds, and I agree with you. I think the community, especially at the higher tiers of play, I've only found that it gets more and more a welcoming place, even when you play at these really high levels. Like,
totally.
I did not have any, I mean, amongst however many, I don't know, 12 games I played, 13 games? Probably 13. I didn't have a single opponent, even, you know, when the games matter a whole lot, who I felt was being curt or try-hardy. Like, I think even those harsh games, people were in a right frame of mind, and I mean, it really showed how great this community is. It's the reason we stick around, right? But to the more technical end of that, so one of the big things an X-Wing player has to do going into one of these major events is try to figure out what their expectations for the metagame are and both pick a list based on that and also figure out strategies to deal with whatever the top meta stuff is going in. So prior to playing at Worlds, looking forward to Worlds, what were your expectations for the metagame?
Yeah, I expected to see a lot of Jedi specifically. I think they're well, I listen to other podcasts besides Radio TCX. Sorry, Tim.
What?
In addition to Radio TCX. And a lot of people were talking about Jedi, specifically Anakin and Obi and Rick. That was a list that was making the rounds, I think, made famous by Carson. So well done there, Carson. But specifically with regen, really, really powerful in keeping MOV. To win out games, hitting a couple ships, getting half points, and then being able to duck and run for a while. Other CIS swarms with a smattering of Soon Fok. Jenden Inquisitors was a big thing. Rebel Beef. Quick Draw Tav Kylo. Resistance 4, T-70s, A-Wings, and Pods flavored. And then Scum-wise, the two lists were the Control Hawk Delete, which I faced twice, and then Old T, Ketsu, and Cavil. That's a lot there.
That's a long list. Yeah.
But to be honest, you had to prep for all those because you were probably going to expect, you were going to see some of those. And I saw most of that list.
Well, and I think it speaks to the diversity of the metagame. We can get into that later. But it seemed like, there was a lot you had to prep for. And that's very different for people who aren't familiar with past Worlds. Usually the metagames we were going into, especially towards the end of first edition, were pretty well-defined and pretty narrow. So there was not a lot of upset you'd see here. I mean, it was any of these list archetypes could have taken the whole thing, right? And even the one that did was not one I expected.
Yeah, and ironically, the thing that won Worlds was Aces.
Yeah, that's what happens. But especially it's interesting to see the iterations too, because your list is both an iteration of other Separatist swarms, and even the current, you know, top ranking Jedi regen list is kind of an iteration of the type of stuff Carson was running at Gen
Con.
It's different now. But that's what we see as metagames develop, right? As the points start to settle out, we really see what is the top within each of these archetypes.
Yep.
So to that end, let's talk about your Separatist Swarm, which was a little bit standout from the other Sep Swarms. What were you flying?
I was flying Seer, That's the Bell Lab with Soulless One title, which adds two hull, allows rerolls if on defense if they're not in your firing arc, and then Kraken, which allows me to keep three calculate tokens for three different ships through, but more importantly, gives me the calculate action on Seer, which was huge.
Yeah.
To be able to use his own ability. And then seven drones, six separatists at I3 and one Trade Federation drone at I1, but stripped down. No struts, no energy escape, energy shell charges, just naked.
Now, and I know you had the one Trade Federation drone in there, and I'm assuming it was primarily because of the way the points shook out, but something deep down in my heart says you were really trying to help me win the Radio TCX bet about which pilot was going to make the final table. And you just had to slide one in there just for me, which I
appreciate. That was totally the reason why. no, it was more points-wise. I mean, this squad comes in at exactly 200. But secondly, I needed an I1 blocker for other drones. It allowed me, or I2s specifically. If it's an I2 sinker swarm, for example, that I1 was key in coming in to block the other I2s so that my I3s could come in and get shots against unmodded ships.
Yeah, and I mean, it was interesting to see your Separatist Swarm. So in the top 32, when we looked at the numbers, obviously you were top 8. There were three other Separatist Swarms in the top 32, but none of them were running those I3 Separatist drones. They were primarily composed of those I1 Trade Federation drones. So what was the major reasons you opted for the I3s over the I1s?
Yeah, so what's crazy is those I1s in those other top 32 lists all had struts on them for the most part.
For the most part, or a spattering of them. Yeah.
Right, and that brings that chassis to 20 points for an I1. But for 21 points, I can get an I3, which is a big deal to not get initiative killed, especially, I mean, I ran through all those other meta expectations. There are a lot of I3s in there. You got
absolutely,
the I3 Inquisitors. You got the I3 Rebel B for I2. You got Tavson, who's I3. You got Resistance 4s with T-70s that are all I3. Control Hawk Delete has all I2s. Sinker Swarm I2s. I mean, there's so many I2s in there that getting initiative killed at I1 was something that happened to me going to Gen Con. And so that may have actually given me a leg up on the competition because I got to see that in the wild in mass. So for Worlds, I was ready for it, which is why I bumped up to I3.
And you really feel like you didn't lose much on not having that Grappling Struts tech available to you, not having those options?
It just means you have to fly it a little differently. You got to block lanes instead of being able to just fly onto a rock or a debris cloud and just pivot. Also, Jedi are going to bring gas clouds, which is something that struts don't work on.
Right.
And so it was like, well, that's half of the asteroids, okay, or obstacles rather, so that's really not going to matter. And then also, I experienced getting those I1s initiative killed, like at Gen Con, but then also local games. Right before Worlds, and actually when I was on the cast last time, I talked about a entire I1 list that I was planning on running, and then I changed it up because of those local games that I lost at I3s. I felt like, I don't mean to be insulting, but I was talent-wise better than those other players I was playing, but I just got rolled because they were initiative killing drones.
Sure.
And actually, shout out to John, one of your co-podcasting hosts, was like, dude, change to I3s. What do you mess around with I1s for? And I was like, yeah, but the I1s are all there, and I can fit struts on them. And DFS 311, who's big, because he can throw a calculate to whoever has a bullseye lined up. And then also, just vanity, I wanted all my ship colors to match. And I was like, I have friends who have other gray Separatist drones, I'll just borrow them. And I did, and it was great.
So now I'm going to have to say, though, I think you would have come to the I3 realization on your own. John knew that, too, so he just wanted to ride the coattails of your potential success.
He was literally telling me that, though, for over a month. And I finally was like, fine, we'll try it. And after that, I was like, yep, this is way better.
This is the only way. All right.
Yeah, exactly.
Proper credit to John, then I'll take back what I said. All right. So you had your expectations for the way the metagame was going to look. Now, did that translate directly over to what your hardest matchups ended up being?
Switching over to the I3s meant my hardest matchups were no longer Sinker Swarms, no longer I2 beef, which is good.
Good.
It changed a matchup from almost an auto loss to almost an auto win. So in my top 32 game against Saratessum, an amazing pilot, but primarily, and a local Minnesota player, so it sucks that we got paired up, but whatever.
Yeah, not great.
Right,
both
exactly.
Both made top 32 at least, so that's good.
Oh, for sure, which was great. But she had OB, and then all I2s, and then an I3 broadside. And I saw that, and I was like, I've won this game. And she's talked about that in OCX as well. She said the same thing, unless dice swung really crazy hard, which unfortunately they swung really crazy hard in my favor in that game for her. It was going to be an auto loss. And so I didn't have to worry about that archetype anymore. So then to answer your question, my hardest matchups became bombs, which I didn't expect to see a lot of, and then regen Jedi, just because they can swoop in, take half points from a ship, and then just kind of run. And they can start popping droids pretty consistently.
And you came across regen Jedi a couple times in Swiss?
I ran into it one time in Swiss and twice in the top cut.
Oh, geez.
In the Swiss game, I got demolished. It was awful. I didn't get a single point. I got 4 damage into Rick, but he just regen back up to full points again. But I learned a lot from that game. And so from that point on, I knew how it was flown, and unfortunately, Chris Norris, who is my pairing in the top 128 game, literally had the exact same list I'd saw in Swiss, and it was one of his squad mates, and he flew it exactly like his squad mate did. And so I knew
what
to
do. Sure, so you already had the inside knowledge. Yeah,
I did. Yep. And then it was even easier when I faced Paul in top 16, Paul LaRue from Canada, and again, he flew it very, very similarly, and so I knew what to do and was able to execute it well.
So overall, though, what do you feel like was the most challenging game you played at Worlds? I'm assuming probably not your top 8 game, because that was more a little back and forth. Like, what was the one that really taxed you the most?
Yeah, it was actually my top 128 game against Chris. Even though I knew what to do, Chris is an amazing pilot. He was very cagey. He did not take any risks whatsoever. And that game came down to the last throw of the dice. I had two ships shooting. Yeah, exactly. I had two ships shooting at range 3 on an unmodded Plo. He was flying Po. And I needed to get 2 damage through to get half points on Plo, or to kill Plo, I think, in that case. And somehow push the damage through. We did the math afterwards, and it was like a 35% chance that happens.
Ouch.
But I was getting shots. He wasn't, right? So that's the difference in those games is, well, no dice is worse than rolling dice.
And I mean, how many regen Jedi games come down to, if they're close, it comes down to the Jedi not taking damage being the primary win factor for the Jedi player, right?
Yep. Well, and Plo specifically, because he has less force, was my target in that matchup, because that means less mods. Rick can very easily regen, and so was able to kind of go after Rick first, then kind of feign going after Obi, and then turn the entire swarm into Plo in a kill box scenario. Got half points on him, and then was able to hunt him down for the kill.
So if you had to look back at your Worlds experience and all the games you played, are there any list decisions you wish you would have made different going into it, or were you pretty confident with what you brought?
I mean, there's not too much wiggle room with 200 points.
Sure.
I got a lot of people that saw me bringing Kraken. They're like, what are you bringing Kraken for? TA-175 is totally where it's at. I used Kraken every single game. He was key in every single game, I'd argue, as well.
Right.
Specifically carrying that calculate for Seer. Using Seer's ability on Seer happened almost every single game, and I was able to punch damage through in a really big way. So I felt great about the list I brought. I honestly wouldn't have changed anything looking back.
That's fair.
One added thing, so the I3s specifically, all right, well, did they really matter? They mattered in 6 out of my 12 games that I played at Worlds.
Sure, they
so
made the difference.
Definitely was the right decision.
Well, I guess then the real question we got to ask is, how does it feel to be the top-ranked Separatist player in the world? That's got to be pretty good, right?
Oh, man. I mean, Tim, here's the deal. Maybe on paper, I am. True. I made it the furthest at Worlds in the biggest tournament, but there's so many talented CIS players. XY from Singapore. He goes by XY because no one can pronounce his name.
Awesome guy, though. He's so cool. Yeah.
He's so cool. And he came up to me after the top 8 game and I lost. And he put both hands on my shoulders and he goes, Paul, you make Separatists proud. And he gave me a big hug.
Thanks, Dad.
You're so awesome. He's so cool. And we actually got paired up in Swiss, and dice were not kind to him in that game. He had one move that was just amazing. Game was actually streamed. You'll be able to find out on Gold Squadron later. But I was definitely intimidated by that game because he was arguably the best Separatist player going into Worlds, for sure. And then also got to mention Ryan Stan Wazowski. I can't pronounce his last name, and I butchered it, and I'm sorry.
I think it's Stanazuski.
Stanazuski. Oh, gosh. I just call him Ryan. Anyway, he got top 32, which was a great accomplishment as well, and he's an OCX podcaster, an Isle boy, which or at least has ties with them. I have my roots in Iowa, so I got to give him a shout-out, too.
Wait, do you also listen to OCX?
I do, Tim. I listen to a lot of podcasts. If you want me to go through it, I will. So Radio TCX is that's the one I've been listening to the longest because you guys have the best content, and I'm not just saying that.
Thank you.
I listen to Gold Squadron podcast. They have great stuff. Fly Better podcast, formerly known as Minox.
Shh, don't, you can't say that.
OCX. I do listen to Crates. They actually have really good content, like in as little
nuggets.
Oh, they
do. No, those guys are so sharp. Yeah.
They are. They know their stuff, man. Yeah, and then a few other random ones. Barons down in Alabama. I listen to a lot of content. And so I guess if you're looking to get better at the game, listen to a lot of podcasts. There's a lot of content out there that's really good and going to give you knowledge as far as what to try, what to expect in the field, that kind of thing.
I get the other question I did want to ask too was publicly, John put out a bounty on your head for any games. Anybody who beat you at Worlds would get a beer bought by John. Now, did that put extra pressure on you? Because it's already a lot of pressure going into Worlds, knowing you're going to play against some of the best X-Wing players in the world.
Truthfully, probably not. but at the same time, like, I definitely didn't want to see John's look on his face when he's like, yeah, he beat you. I'm going to buy him a beer. Because he gets that little, like,
another beer.
That look that gets you. And so I lost three games, but two of my opponents don't drink.
So
I had to buy one.
See, he should have broadened it and, you know, offered to buy them something else too.
Yeah, no, but I mean, I enjoy pressure to a point, so I was fine with it. Yeah, anyway, we can talk about it later, but there was definitely a point where it was like, all right, this is too much pressure.
So after you had made it through Swiss, you know you're going into day two. What's the emotional state you're in there too? Because I made it through LCQ into the main qualifier, but that's not quite the leap as going from the main qualifier into the day two cut. Very different thing. What was your feelings at that point? Were you nervous? What were the emotions going on?
Yeah, I mean, my goal going into Worlds was to make the day two cut. I knew that I had a pretty good shot. I felt pretty good about the meta call that I had. And so I was just excited to be able to make cut. And sure. So I felt like anything after that was just going to be gravy. And a lot of other players I heard that made cut said the same thing. And so at first it was just elated to be there playing day two, was really excited. Saw that I got paired up against Chris, who I knew about ahead of time. I was like, oh man, this is going to be rough. But again, it was like, all right, we'll give it my shot. We'll see how it goes. And so the first round of elimination, there's really no pressure at all, just because I had nothing to lose. Right. And then it proceeded to get, I guess, worse and better in a way, explaining that. So then my top 64 game, and I'm not going to give too much detail. I did write up a battle report if anyone's interested. Hopefully you can link it out.
Yeah.
Or PM
we
me.
Can link the... Paul did an awesome write-up of his experience at Worlds covering all the games there, so we'll definitely throw that up, throw a link up there on the Radio TCX page.
Perfect. That'd be awesome. So got into the top 64 game, and nerves were starting to hit quite a bit against Bohan Lee.
Suddenly the pressure's on, right? Like,
yeah.
Oh man, I could get top 32, I could get top 16.
Yeah, well, I mean, top 64 already, it's like, well, I'm further than I wanted to be, or expected to be, I guess, but... Bohan won Canadian Nationals, I think. I definitely heard of him. I'm a big fan of the Salt Squadron guys based in Canada, and they talk about him a lot. And he was flying Taos and Quickdraw and Kylo, which is a great list. If flown well, can be difficult for me to win against. But pulled that one out, did what I needed to do. Then top 32 game, found out I was going to be on stream. At that point, all of a sudden, you're at top 32. You get handed that Plo Koon damage deck, and you're like, oh, okay, yeah, this is getting really
fast.
This
is the big time, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That game, I wasn't that stressed out, specifically because I saw the list and was like, okay, yeah, I have a good matchup against Sarah. And then dice went my way. But I would say actually mid-game, instead of being relaxed, because sweet, I won this, I'm going to get top 16, the adrenaline started to hit really, really hard. My hands started to get really shaky. My heart was just going a mile a minute. And then I guess realized, oh my goodness, not only am I top 16, I'm the last Minnesota player standing. I got to defend home turf.
Everyone's on your side now from MN.
Right.
Yeah.
And like, and I knew that Minox interview top 16 as well. And so like that was rolling through my head as well. And it was just like, is this real life right now? Like, oh man. And then my top 16 game happened, which wasn't streamed, but going into that game, my hands were so shaky. Like I was apologizing to Paul every single time I was moving chips. And even a couple times like, hey, can you just move this? Cause I can't even do this. I was having dry mouth. I was queasy. Like I was not feeling well.
Sure. Yeah.
Into that game, which I was not expecting.
It is funny to see how our loyalties shift too. Just speaking kind of broadly, like as I saw all the Minnesota players who made into day two, and then as they were dropping off as we proceeded through the cut rounds, like to see the loyalty shift, like, all right, Paul or Sarah, all right, we're on Team Paul now. All right, Paul's right. Out. Now it's Team America. Yeah,
like, that definitely happened.
You just root for whoever, yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I was glad I at least didn't get knocked out top 16 game. Sarah gave me a big hug, wish her nothing but the best, great pilot, and says, win this thing. And I was like, I'll do my best. And so to be able to say, yeah, I won my next game for you, right? Like that felt
right.
Good.
Didn't drop off right away, yeah.
Right, exactly. But then after that game, one of the FFG judges comes up and he's like, all right, you're going to be on stream on our main stage next. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm already nervous. Like I'm already not feeling well. But then I saw who my opponent was, which is Alex, who ended up top four. Spoilers, he beat me. And I had flown against him in my first round of Swiss. And so in some ways it kind of felt perfect to bookend my two games to both be against Alex. Dice didn't go my way for sure. But again, I don't want to blame that. He did a great job of drawing me into the rock. And as soon, like there was definitely a definitive point. If you watch that game back that you're like, oh, Paul realized he's going to lose. And as soon as that happened, I immediately relaxed. Like I was able to just enjoy where I was at and just soak everything
right.
in and just be like, man, this was an amazing run. And Alex and I had a big hug afterwards, and it was such a great moment. Couldn't be proud of the run. Super proud to represent Minnesota, and had a ton of fun doing it.
Well, I mean, we're honestly super proud of you, too. I totally get what you're saying, too, about, like, once you get to, like, you realize even after that game is basically over, you're like, well, I made top eight. Like,
yeah.
I represented. I was on stream. Like, nothing to be ashamed about there. And honestly, you know, we're all super proud of you. Obviously, you were the Minnesota player that went the distance as far as any Minnesota player did. So we're all super proud of you here. Even John, I bet, though he might not
have. I love the crap John gives me, though, man. It's good. Keeps me sharp.
So for any listeners out there who are interested in playing Separatist Swarms or even just Swarms in general, is there any advice you'd give them to start going into the Separatist Avenue or learning how to do Swarm play?
Yeah, so from a practical standpoint, you need to have a lot of ships.
Yeah,
you got to buy
sense.
A lot. I would say Separatists are probably one of the most expensive factions to get into just because you have to have so many components.
Right.
So to do that in the most efficient way possible, I have some recommendations, which is first buy two Servants of Strife packs. You get four Vultures, two Beelzebubs, and like all the upgrades you're going to need. If you want to focus on flying true Vulture Swarms, you probably need to buy three more Vulture packs individually. I'd suggest a Hyena Bomber because there's some upgrades in there, including the TA-175.
Yep.
I'd recommend a Sith Infiltrator, and I'd recommend one or two Nantex. All of that, like if you go onto Amazon, you can probably spend $200 to $250 and have everything you need to be competitive in the faction.
Sure. And then you'd be able to shake it up. You've got a lot of ship options there. Any, you know, that sounds expensive. Honestly, as far as miniatures games go, it's still one of the cheaper buy-ins. You know, get the core set and 200 points worth of ships to have that many options.
Yeah, and unfortunately, because it's one of the newer factions, you're probably not going to see people, like, selling their collection where you can get away without doing with, like, Rebels or Imperial or even Scum. But if you are willing to bite that bullet, you can definitely get into it. Yeah, as far as, like, actual flying goes, put the swarm on the table. Like, just fly 8 ships together by yourself for hours. I've literally done that so that you know exactly where you're going to end up, including where barrel rolls are going to put you, so that you're not going to bump into rocks, because that kills actions efficiency. I mean, put on struts at first if you're worried about it, because that makes it a little easier. But I would say take them off first, just to make sure that you know exactly where you're going to land. Because even when you put struts mm-hmm. on, you want to make sure that you're actually going to hit a rock. Because if you don't and you just fly over it, you have to roll for the rock damage.
And that's something, I mean, the swarm play, either full swarms or mini swarms too there, that's one of those first tiers of play that you can move up from the beginner level, where if you're able to do a mini swarm, 4 ships in a cube, or do an even larger swarm than that, and you're able to bank them without bumping, that's a good starting point.
Yep. As far as actually flying that swarm on the table, what I recommend doing is set them up in kind of a box formation with 6, putting a 2 straight template in between each line of them, so that when you do banks, you won't bump. You can test this out on the table yourself, but that's generally a good rule of thumb to actually try out when you're setting them up. Then to turn the entire swarm, you have 3 of them do a 1 hard, the other 3 do a 3 hard, and that can pivot your direction as far as where the 6 are facing, so that you don't end up in a conga line. A couple things to test out. And that, if you can do that well and pick your lanes effectively, is really going to improve your flying.
So, Paul, now that you're a truly top-tier X-Wing player and you've got the credentials to prove it, looking at the game as a whole, you know, we're wrapping up. We finished the first year of 2nd Edition. It kind of closed out with that first World Championships for 2nd Edition. Looking forward, I want to ask you a couple questions about the overall state of the game.
Yeah.
So, I think the big broad one initially is, do you feel like, now that you've seen Worlds and you've seen what's in the metagame, do you feel like the X-Wing metagame's in a healthy place?
Oh my goodness, yes.
Easy enough.
when I was describing like what I had to prep against, right? Like there were 7 different archetypes. Like that didn't happen in 1.0.
Very distinct too. Yeah, they're all
right.
Very different.
I think arguably this is the most diverse meta we've ever seen in X-Wing history, from at least back when I was playing in 2015 up till now. And I love it. It's so refreshing. It does mean that sometimes in longer tournaments, you can get paired up against really tough matchups if you're not ready for them, or if you just have some hard counters, just kind of luck of the draw, which kind of stinks. But I'd still rather have that than have like 2 or 3 lists that everyone's flying.
Right. No, it's more interesting. And the games become more interesting there when there's more varied options than what people are going to bring. Suddenly you do have to employ different strategies, and it makes the game more engaging for me, you know, even if it's trickier.
Oh, yeah. And I would argue, too, this is going to float my own boat a little bit and sound self-conceited.
This is the opportunity. This is an interview about you. Float your boat.
With such a diverse meta, I think the cream of the crop players-wise rises to the top. Because it's not so much comboing, do you have the best upgrade cards? It's more about, hey, how are you going to be able to fly? How are you be able to change when you see a list put on the table across from you? How are you able to do stamina-wise, seeing so many different things? I think the best players truly do shine.
Well, and I think it helps, too, when you see a diversity not only of different factions, but also just the archetypes. So we saw efficiency stuff, we saw mid-range, we saw ace play. When the metagame narrows and, like, you know, oh, it's an aces metagame, well, suddenly those players who specialize in things like mid-range, stuff I love, or efficiency, they have to try and fall into the molds that they don't fit into. Whereas when you have this more open selection of different viable ship list types, that allows each player to excel at whatever their special skill set is within the game.
Yep, totally agree.
Now, so you think it's a pretty healthy metagame right now. You seem to be on board with that. Are there any changes you'd like to see or expect to see in the coming points update?
Yeah, so I think the points update's scheduled for December, is that right?
Something like that, yeah.
Or somewhere around
there? I'm expecting it before LVO, so.
So I would say overall, abilities that let you get full information before they trigger, so for example, Crackshot, for example, Seer, for example, Sense, are all things that probably need to go up because they're very, very powerful in the game. So as much as it pains me, Seer probably needs to go up in points about 4 to 5 at least. Crackshot is another one. I mean, we saw that in Dan's list, who is in the top 2 in mass, probably from 1 point to 2 or even 3. I mean, we've seen Juke, for example, go up quite substantially, so there's precedent for that.
Sure.
Drones probably should go up a point, again, as much as it pains me to say. They're really, really good. Linked calculations, networked, or rather, network calculations and linked calculate from a barrel roll
sure.
is super, super powerful. I don't love regen.
Yeah.
It feels nobody bad does, when, except, you get, yeah. when you get four damage on Rick and then he flies away and you didn't do anything to him because
and you didn't
regen
do
twice.
Anything. Yeah.
Right, exactly. So I don't know if like they need to change the rules where if you ever get half points on a ship, that sticks and you're actually granted it, or if you just make regen more expensive.
Sure. I think the practical way is to just make it more expensive.
Yeah.
Because I like the idea of score tracking in X-Wing. Like, I do think that would be a better way to play the game, where we're just tracking points as we go. The first time a regen ship dips below half, you score it, even if it goes above again. I think that would be my preferred way to balance it, but I think the more practical way and what's more likely is just to see an increase in cost.
Yep, and that's fine, and they have precedent for doing that. For example, the trip Upsilons, they were just like, I can't really play this anymore because of
costs. Cost more, yeah.
So, I mean, that's fine. And then... I don't know. The only kind of negative vibes that happened at Worlds was a particular list that was four Star Vipers actually flew against that list and that player in round 7 of Swiss. And specifically because you have to engage that list, and it means that if you don't, you're going to go into a final salvo of some capacity where you have less attack dice than they do probably.
Right.
And I don't know how to fix that other than just identifying those lists and out costing them points wise, unless you limit the amount of salvo dice. So this is hot news. Today, the rules update happened through FFG, and you now are limited to a max of 6 attack dice or a max of 6 defense dice.
Yeah. That's interesting.
So if you're going to take that a step further, fine, limit final salvo to 6 dice total too.
That's interesting. Okay, so they put hard caps on there to limit comboing.
They did.
That would be interesting to see on Final Salvo then, because it would make it more random, as it's kind of supposed to be.
As a player, you're not just bringing a ton of attack dice being like, well, I have an advantage here. They have to come to me. Now, all of a sudden, the playing field is level, probably. And so you have to engage, right? I think if you have like Vader, Inky... and let's say Whisper, you might have a disadvantage. No, it's still 7. So yeah, 6 dice I think is fine.
So one thing, adjustment you haven't mentioned is Sunfock. Do you think he's a problem in the game? It's a big talking point for people even still.
Yeah. So this may be controversial, but no, I don't think he's a problem. Full disclosure, I was a play tester of the Nantex. You'll see my name on the actual ship. So I can share that now. And to be fair too, when we tested it before people rage, the bump proof ability of giving yourself a tractor if you run into somebody was not a thing. That was like a post thing that we saw when the ship was released. We're like, wait a second, this is not something we tested. Not trying to throw FFG under the bus, but that's what happened. That being said, at the end of the day, Sunfock is a 4 health ship with 1 mod, maybe 2 if you're sending over a calculate from DFS 311.
Sure.
But it dies pretty quick to focus fire. If you bring debris clouds, he doesn't like to see stress, so you can make sure that you can control those lanes because he can't barrel roll over and then rotate, pseudo barrel roll with the tractor beam. And then also medium and large based ships, he really can't do anything to because of how they rewrote tractor beam effects.
Right.
So, I mean, yes, he's kind of an ace hunter, but I don't think it's a big deal. Again, I've played against him a lot, and it wasn't an issue, even in prepping for Worlds. I think you need to be more afraid of Chertek. That's the Nantex pilot that allows you to reroll 2 attack dice on a ship that's tractored. He's only initiative 4, but he's so much cheaper. He is a definite bang for your buck right now. And I know I've been testing some list spoilers that have Chertek, Seer, and a bunch of droids together. And I think that was another archetype.
Interesting. Secret tech until it gets point costed out of use.
Yeah. If he flies under the radar and doesn't get bumped up points-wise, I will definitely be flying him.
All right, Paul. So thank you so much for being on the show today. It's cool to do these long format interviews too, especially without Carson or John distracting me. So thanks for coming on the show. Anything you'd like to say out to all the listeners of Radio TCX or anybody else who's going to listen to you talk for an hour?
Yeah, I got to give some shout outs to where they're due. Obviously to Radio TCX. Thank you guys for having me on. You had me on the show before I was anybody. So thank you for that. As
the worst member of Radio TCX, I'd like to say you're welcome. If you don't understand the context of this, check out our Patreon feed for the exclusive version of this episode. Continue, Paul. Go ahead.
No, that's a great plug. I got a shout out to Salt Squadron up in Canada. They were kind of the first group that were like, you're one of us now, and sent me a bunch of swag and templates and stuff. My Des Moines X-Wing players, that's where I learned to play the game, and that community is really what fostered me to say, I want to have a welcoming environment at my local store to bring anybody in, give them free swag, whatever it takes, make sure that we're flying casual and so that people have a good experience first and foremost,
yeah,
beyond competition. So huge shout out to them because they set that precedent for me. And then lastly, to the TCX community in general, the Gaming Goat in Woodbury, Minnesota is my local store. Amazing group of players. And again, fostering that same type of community. Come out there if you ever want a really good experience with players that are going to high five you and have beers afterwards after the games are all said and done. Tuesday nights, 6:30, dials down.
Awesome, Paul. Again, thank you so much for being on the show. It's great to have you.
Thank you, Tim. It was a pleasure and an honor. And hopefully the LVO, you can bring it home.
Final table, you and me.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. It'll be great. Thanks, Tim. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX. If you are a member of our Patreon page, you can actually hear an exclusive version of this episode. It's mostly the same, except there's some extra content at the end, including a little gag reel afterwards. So if you are a patron and you're listening to this on the main iTunes feed, be sure to check it out on our Patreon page. If you are not yet a patron of Radio TCX, you can do so by going on to patreon.com/radiotcx. We're still working on the logo redesign. It's going to be a little bit before we can get some tokens out to you guys again. They are on the way. It's just taking longer than I expected. In the meantime, hopefully we're going to have some more audio content for you guys to get exclusive at the Patreon page. So if you want to become a patron and support the show directly, please do that by going to Patreon. Otherwise, you can like our Facebook page at facebook.com/radiotcx. You can follow us on Twitter at Radio TCX Podcast. And if you feel like it, please go on to iTunes, leave us a 5-star review. Those 5-star reviews on iTunes are really important in getting the show out there and letting people know you enjoy it. So if you could take a moment, write a comment there saying why you like the podcast, we would really appreciate it. Again, a huge thank you to Paul for coming on the show today. And hopefully Carson and John will both be back for next week's episode. So until then, enjoy some X-Wing, and we'll talk to you later.